Business meeting, January 15th, 2019.
Hey, everybody, thank you for joining us today.
Excuse me, just.
I thought red lights meant I could talk.
Okay, we're recording.
All right, try this again. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. It's Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. Going to ask for some patience. This is the first meeting I've run in quite a while, and if I slip up, someone please get me back online. This is the La Plata County Board of County Commissioners. I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order, which I just did. In attendance, we have Commissioner Clyde Church, second official meeting, and Commissioner Gwen Lackelt, so and myself, Commissioner Westendorf, so we're all here. I'd ask you to please turn your phones to vibrate, remove your hats, and rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have in front of us an agenda. Are there any changes you would like to make to the agenda?
Madam Chair, I have a couple of changes. I would move that we put the consent agenda before the presentation today, and then we add in public comment, which was inadvertently left off of this agenda.
Okay, and we will do the public comment. So let's look at the agenda item numbers. So we will do public comment as agenda item 5. We will do consent agenda as item number 6, and then every presentations will be number 7, and everything else will adjust accordingly. Does that match what you were hoping to do?
Certainly.
Okay, then. We have a motion to approve the agenda as amended. Those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
That motion passes. That takes us to identification of potential or perceived conflicts of interest. Commissioners, do you have any potential or perceived conflicts of interest you need to disclose?
I have no disclosures.
No disclosures.
I have no disclosures to make either. That takes us to the public comment portion of our meeting. We do this at every business meeting of the La Plata County Board of County Commissioners, and this is an opportunity for a member of the public to address the board on any matter of public concern that is not other county concern that is not otherwise on the agenda. Would anyone care to make a comment at this time? Mr. Buchholz.
I'm not going to do your presentation, Chuck, so.
It's not my presentation.
So, I'm not going to use that reasoning. Good morning, commissioners and county staff. My name is Jimbo Buick-Rude. I live at 7707 County Road 203. I'm here today as part of my work with San Juan Citizens Alliance, watchdogging and paying attention to water issues in La Plata County and this watershed. So I'm here actually to express concern, not really whining, but I want to bring something to your attention. And that is about a year ago, right now, I brought to you my concerns about reappointment to the Southwestern Water Conservation District of Mr. Bob Wolf. And I said, if you're going to go forward with that, you know, it's your decision, but I encourage you to have a greater amount of conversation, information, you know, exchange and so forth, and you know, during that period of time. And so I'm kind of checking back on that after a year. And I'm obviously not privy to all of the side conversations, you know, individual phone calls and so forth, but what I'm seeing in the public record is that Mr. Wolf came and delivered a 20-minute update in early July that gave you some information about, mostly about the drought and water conditions and so forth like that. So a couple things here. I'm just reminding you that that's not happens necessarily in other counties where there's ongoing reports from their representative to Southwestern Water Conservation District. You know, quarterly reports are often more than that, having to do with saline issues to that county and that watershed. And, you know, obviously go about it as you need to, want to, but I'm thinking there could be a lot more information exchanged. So, you know, during that report, Mr. Wolf talked about local conditions, a little bit about the compact, some things about a local reservoir, and definitely of items of concern, but just point out three or four things that I think would be worth for you to be up to speed upon and, you know, pay attention to and engage in conversation with him about and see what how he was representing the county. Because I think, as you know, La Plata County is the largest contributor to the Southwestern Water Conservation District through its taxpayer base. So a couple of these issues are Southwestern holds significant water rights of the remaining most significant water rights on the Amos River to a tune of, I can't remember exactly, 200,000 CFS, or it's a lot of water. And it might be great to inquire, like, what are their plans for that? Do they plan to push forward and develop that, especially in the current situation with what's going on the Upper Compact and looking ahead to our water concerns? And I know you had a conversation with Mr. Wolf about the aerification, generally diminished flows. I think it would be worthy to ask why the district spends a tremendous amount of money, and I don't have the number right in front of me, $100,000 or $200,000, I think it is, in this last budget on legal fees, much of which is not ever discussed in the public forum. It's always within, most of the time it's within executive session, so it's not, you could probably ask that question, I can't ask that question, know what's going on with that money. I think it would be great to find out if you should think of whether you're in sync with the Southwestern's common position to oppose in-stream flows, of which Mr. Wolf is usually in support of that majority. And, you know, they said before that they were not in, they're concerned about ones that are in the downstream areas such as the Lower Stores River, but they're now in opposition to one at the very high point of a watershed in Hinds Creek. And so it seems like it's not just, you know, it seems like it's more ideological than specific, so that's another reason. I think it'd be good to connect. And also, I just think, you know, I've been a little bit concerned that there hasn't been much show here that I've seen and a report in from Mr. Wolf with you on some water quality issues having to do with the Amos watershed. And I know that your staff and others have come to you with those concerns, but I think we all know now that the 416 fire, for example, had a lot greater impact on the watershed than the Gold King. And we know during the Gold King how much light was brought to that attention. So those are just a few things that I'd like to bring your concern that I suggest that you engage with that. If this could be represented, that's representing our county, our interests, and in the Animas watershed, and as well as also, you know, the Pine and La Plata as well as you go forward. I'd love to see, you know, La Plata take, engage with their representative on the district like some other counties do in a more involved way. So thank you.
Can I ask a clarifying question, Chair? You said that the Southwestern Board has a position opposing minimum in-stream flows on the rivers in the basin?
So, generally speaking, over the last, you know, couple few years, when the Colorado Water Conservation Board comes up with in-stream flow recommendations, that are often, you know, they work with Parks and Wildlife on that, and they also work with the Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service. And right, those in-stream flow recommendations are always a minimum standard, right? And usually the recommendations usually have to do with fish specifically, but sometimes they think a little bit broader than that. But for example, the one that was brought forth in conjunction with the Bureau of Land Management, the CWCB proposed on the Lower Dolores, the Southwestern District opposed that very strongly and went all the way to a court decision, of which they did not prevail at. And so it's like, okay, well, they had supposed to be some specific concerns there, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that they said, well, in-stream flow was not designed for a reach that was the very lower end of a watershed. You know, that was the Dolores section of the river just before it leaves the state. However, right now we have one before us. We've had other ones before us before, like this one, the Pines Creek, which is in Archuleta County, that have to do with the very end of the scale. You know, this is the very tip top. There's no water rights on Hans Creek, and there's no conflicts in that regard, and yet there's opposition to that. And so that's two examples that I've seen in the last couple of years. And so there seems to be a pattern of non-support for those minimum flow designations that CWCB has, you know, as part of state law to preserve certain values of what they might be. And of course, they're set aside from water rights that are privately held. You know, these are held by the state for some other specific purpose. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there any other member of the public who would like to address the board on a matter that's not otherwise on the agenda? Okay, thank you. We will close public comment at this time then and move to the consent agenda. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda before us. We've had an opportunity to review all of those, the reports and relevant documentation. Any changes, anything you would like to remove from the consent agenda? All right, I'd entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I move that we approve today's consent agenda.
Okay, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, consent agenda is approved. That takes us to presentations. And this is a presentation from our long-term finance committee and with recommendations for fiscal sustainability. I'm gonna thank the long-term finance committee right off the bat. We appreciate the work you folks have done. Some of you have been working on this for a number of years, and we always really value the insight you have and the thought you put into putting together your forecast and the like. So I'll pass it to the interim county manager, Chuck Stevens, to introduce the topic.
All right, Commissioner, good morning, thank you. Our long-term finance committee, first of all, I want to recognize not only the work that they've done, but the many, many years of experience that they have and their financial acumen and background. I mean, these are truly experts in their fields, and they volunteer their time to come forward, review our financial reports, review the budget, and have put a lot of due diligence and academic rigor into the presentation that you're about to see. So Mr. Butler, Rich Butler, I believe, is going to lead the presentation today. And he's joined, and you see the front row here, is the entire long-term finance committee. And I believe that they're going to chime in as they see fit, given their areas of expertise.
Okay, let's go up here. And good morning. I'm Richard Butler, member of the long-term finance committee. Gather around the microphones. Thank you very much for preparing to listen to what we're going to present today. And I just want to say that the goal today is to outline for you the background and the changes that we've been seeing over the past several years as to what's going on with La Plata County's fiscal structure and some steps that we do believe the board does need to consider going forward. And as Chuck said, we do have quite an array of experts here from people who've been involved in the oil and gas industry globally and in La Plata County. We have CPA auditors, we have financial advisors who have, you know, all of us probably more than 30 years experience each in our respective fields. So without any further ado, I think I will launch this. And the way we are, let's see if this works, indeed it does. Our feeling is that the Board of County Commissioners does need to consider steps to raise revenue for the county going forward. We think that a mill levy increase will be the best way to address the need. And what I want to focus on is why we think this need, in fact, exists today and will actually increase in the very near future. Right now, La Plata County's mill levy is 8.5 mills. That is unchanged since the 1980s. And given what's been going on in La Plata County's economy, that is no longer a sustainable mill levy to permit the county to meet its operating needs in the future. In a like manner, we're going to show why we think economic growth in the future is not going to be sufficient to make up for the negative impact that falling oil and gas revenues have had on the county. And finally, we're going to talk about the size of this deficit that we see, and that all the work that the county has done to manage its expenses to date just won't be sufficient to make up the shortfall in revenues. Finally, one of the big problems that not just La Plata County, the entire state, even metro districts are facing is the Gallagher Amendment has been impacting residential property assessment ratios. And as oil and gas revenues drop, the Gallagher Amendment requires residential assessment levels to also drop so that they maintain a similar ratio that was set back in the 1990s. And that problem is what is impacting us today. So here we are. La Plata County is that little yellow bar on the extreme right. We have the fourth smallest mill levy in the state of Colorado. That was sufficient back in the days when oil and gas was booming here in La Plata County. Those times have changed, and that's what we're going to present to you today. So if we look at our neighboring counties, there's La Plata County also on the far right with an 8.5 mill levy. San Juan is almost 20. Archuleta is 18.2, and Montezuma is 14.33. So once again, that is where we stand with our neighbors. And when we look at counties of a similar structure to La Plata County population, we can see a very, very similar situation. La Plata County is the second one on the right with 8.5. Eagle County at 8.499. Is practically a tie for the smallest in our group. But once again, the reason why 8.5 mills worked in the past is that La Plata County was blessed with a significant inflow of oil and gas revenues, not just from property taxes, but from severance taxes and energy-related grants that has funded the county over the last 15 years. So, why do we think we need this readjustment of mill levies? Well, here's why. Back in 2010, the total value of property in La Plata County stood at approximately $13.2 billion. This information is coming from county assessor records. $13.2 billion. After all of the various assessment adjustments, the taxable assessed value of that $13.4 billion was approximately $3.5 billion. So our assessment ratio in 2010 stood at 26.3%. What's happened subsequently is, as oil and gas production and prices have fallen, the oil and gas valuation in the county has dropped by approximately 50% over the time period from 2010 to today. In addition to that, the Gallagher Amendment has required the residential assessment levels to also be ratcheted down to maintain the historic 45% residential contribution to property tax revenues. So what you get is today, so instead of $13.2 billion of total valuation, today it's approximately 10.8. So the full value of all of the property in La Plata County has dropped 18% from 2010 to today. However, the assessed value today of that property now stands at $1.7 billion. So that's a 50% drop from the 3.5 assessed value in 2010. So 50% drop in assessed valuation, and because of how the Gallagher Amendment works, as oil and gas continues to decline, Gallagher is going to continue to drag down residential property valuation, and we're going to see the main source of La Plata County revenues, which is the property tax, continue to decline as we move into the future.
Mr. Butler, if I
yes.
could ask a question. So if anyone's listening on the internet, and I think some
yep.
will be, as well as maybe some folks in the room, if you could talk a little bit about assessed value versus actual value, and then how that ties to property taxes, and if
sure. Let me see if this. Now that's not. Well, yeah, this might help a bit. I'll go back and forth between these two slides. So, a full value of a property in La Plata County is taxed according, by statute, is taxed according to its assessed value. And these assessed valuations are set by statute. So in La Plata County, oil and gas properties are assessed at 87.5% of their actual value. So you take the actual value, you multiply that by 87.5%, and that is the taxable value of an oil and gas property. You then apply the 8.5 mils to that, and that generates your taxable revenue. Commercial and other property in La Plata County has an assessed value of 27.5% approximately. That is also set by statute. So you take the full value of all the commercial and vacant land and industrial and other categories of property in La Plata County, you reduce it by 72.5%. Or multiply it by 27.5, and that's the taxable value of that property. Residential, however, fluctuates quite a bit more because the Gallagher Amendment, and I forget the exact date, but it was sometime in the 1990s.
92,
I believe, yeah. It states that the assessed value of of residential property taxes in the state of Colorado cannot generate more than 45% of the revenue stream from property taxes. So anytime that the residential values start to rise, their assessed ratio is reduced statewide. So what's been happening is property values on the Front Range, Denver, are just blowing through the ceiling. Property values in La Plata County are not growing as fast. So what happens is Gallagher steps up and says, hold it, statewide residential property taxes are rising too fast. Therefore, we need to lower the assessment ratio statewide, regardless of what's happening in your county or your region. So statewide, that assessment ratio lowers the taxable value of residential property in La Plata County. So I think back about 7 years ago, we had residential valuations in the 14 or 15% level. So you had the value of your home, let's say, was $200,000, but the assessed value of that was, you know, 14% of that $200,000, and you paid your 8.5 mils on that. So today, because of all these Gallagher adjustments that have been made, I believe we're down to 7.2% assessment ratio. So you own that $200,000 home in Durango, its taxable value is 7.2% of that. And when we do our forecasts, we're seeing that assessment ratio on residential property is going to continue to fall. And this is what that has done to property taxes. So here we have the two primary revenue sources for La Plata County. Back in 2010, property taxes raised us $30 million. Sales tax brought in about 14.8. Over time, because of what we're going to show later on in this presentation, over time, property tax revenues have dropped by 50%, down to approximately $15 million. Sales taxes, however, just don't have the oomph to make up for that. You've had a pretty good last, you know, 5 or 6 years. I mean, we're talking about one of the longest economic expansions on record, and sales taxes in La Plata County have not managed to even come close to making up that 50% drop in property taxes. This is, I guess, one of the key things that we need to understand about our economy here in La Plata County. Back in 2010, we had more than 3,000 producing wells, generating, you know, close to 430 million cubic feet of natural gas, and that was valued at about $4 per million cubic feet. Well, because of what's happened both globally and domestically in the U.S., the price of natural gas has fallen consistently. If we took this back to like 2008 or 2006, there were times when it was hitting $6. Now it's down to $2. So a 50% drop from the high in 2010. The reason why our committee believes that this is a permanent change and that we have to adjust to it is because of what's going on with oil and gas in the United States in general. And here's what's happening. And it's, you know, basically one three-letter word. It's called oil. So the U.S. has gone on a very, very much of a tear in oil production throughout the country. That oil production, however, is now using totally new revolutionary techniques, horizontal drilling, fracking, in areas where a byproduct of drilling for oil is natural gas. So what's happening in the Permian Basin south of us near Texas, up in North Dakota, out in the Appalachians, they're drilling for oil, they're finding it, but what they're also producing is significant amounts of natural gas as a byproduct. And what that has done is natural gas supplies are up, and the price has fallen dramatically, simply because it's so cheap. The gas that comes out of the ground when you're looking for oil is so much cheaper to produce than here in La Plata County, where the San Juan Basin is primarily a natural gas basin. So our estimation is that we're going to continue to see natural gas production exceed demand, and this is a forecast that the U.S. government EIA also agrees with. It's going to exceed demand by 2-3% per year, keeping prices depressed. One interesting thing just happened last month. I think on 4 days last month in the Permian Basin, the price of natural gas went negative. So if you were a producer of natural gas and you had to sell it, you had to pay the off-taker to take it. And the reason for that is there was no place to store it. Storage is full. Pipelines are full. And people were paying off-takers to buy natural gas from them. That is the dynamic that's going to keep natural gas prices capped. And it's also the reason why we don't expect that production line. So you can see our production in La Plata County has been falling at about 5% per year. We don't see that changing anytime soon because the supply of natural gas coming out of all these oil wells elsewhere at very, very low prices doesn't pay. And that's one reason you're just not seeing as many wells get punched here as we did 10 years ago. So that's the backdrop. This chart shows the composition of our property tax revenues from 2010, and then we extend that to a projection going forward to give you an idea of what's going to continue to happen. So you'll see that natural gas generated about $18 million of our property tax revenue back in 2010. That number will continue to fall, and that's that orange part of the chart. And you can see that residential has been flat to, you know, slightly up some years, slightly down some years, as Gallagher and other assessment adjustments act on it. And then you'll see the commercial line is that green line on top, and none of them are even going to come close to replacing the lost property tax revenue from natural gas going forward. So the other thing happening while all of our revenues are dropping, the key tax revenues are dropping, La Plata County population continues to grow at about 1.8 to 2.1% per year. So in 2010, this shows the per capita tax revenues from natural gas in green and sales tax in orange. And this shows the exact same picture. We've got natural gas tax revenues dropping. Natural gas property tax revenues falling down to $277 per capita from my eyes aren't that good, 581. And the sales tax per capita number is climbing from, Ron, can you
263?
263.
To
304. To 304, yeah. I either need some better glasses or or I change the fonts next time. So, what's happening in La Plata County? There's our population expansion from over the same time period. Services continue to rise. Couple other very, very important points there that we just didn't have time to put into a chart, but that I think are very, very instructive. Here's what else is going on that's not charted there about demand for service. You know, we're showing you know, the continued expansion of building permits and the like, but a couple other items are incidents reported to the sheriff's office are up 25% over this time period. Arrests are up 103% over this time period. Bookings into the jail are up nearly 20% over this time period. And of course, jail capacity has been flat over this time period. Basically 0% growth in the capacity of the county jail. In a like manner, as the county has adjusted to the financial strain of this falling tax revenue picture, they've been cutting staff. County staff has dropped 18% over this time period. Public safety staff, so one component of that, they're down 6%. And road and bridge staff has been cut by 18%, all in an effort to manage expenses to meet, you know, the falling revenue stream. And in our opinion, we think additional belt tightening just cannot make up for the fall in revenues that are coming. Let me move on to the next one here. So this shows the operating expenses of the county over this time period. And it's important to note that many of the county services are mandated by statute and are very inflexible. This chart shows that, the county has done a pretty remarkable job as population goes up. And one very important thing, this is a nominal number. This has not been adjusted for inflation. So over this same period, we've had inflation reduce this, you know, the general spending power by more than 10%. So this actually represents the you know, the job the county has done in working on managing expenses.
Could you go back to that slide for a second and have a question about the graph itself? So this is a representation that total operating
expenses, yes, that's right,
is flat. It starts at zero in 2011.
Well, you know,
talk about that.
Yeah, you know.
Should we just start in 12 and call it?
Actually,
I
actually think that number is 11, about 59 million, and then rising almost to 60 and 12. It's just the way the graph worked. We had a debate in the committee about whether this type of chart or a line chart would work better, and this chart won out, and maybe it shouldn't have.
Well, it, for clarification.
It just got moved over. If you look at that line, like 19 goes beyond a year. So you just move everything back.
Yeah, shift everything to the left.
So what is showing as 12 is actually 11.
Yes.
And the
right.
Graph should, okay, that's helpful.
Yeah. Yes, right.
And so this total operating expenses, you talked about the reduction as far as employees go and so on. but other expenditures are outside of the control of a lot of businesses and organizations at this time, so that some of the reductions aren't made, they aren't necessarily reflected directly in operating expenses, they're just reflected in lack of increases.
That's a good point, and that one is very difficult to measure, but we think it'll be important to educate people about that so they understand what, you know, what really is going on inside the county operations. That's a good point.
Thank you.
So here I mentioned again inflation, population growth, service levels. One very important thing to note is that when the oil and gas industry suffers, it's just not property taxes. Severance taxes have already dropped by more than 65%, so that will continue. Oil and gas also builds up money at the state level that is then recycled back to the counties in the form of DOLA energy grants. That pot is almost empty. So we're going to continue to see other elements of the county income statement also suffer just beyond property taxes. Let me try this here. Trying to move it to the next one? Oh, there we go. Got it. You know, this kind of moves now into the specific funds. You know, we've been talking countywide across all of its operations, but the real key major funds, and when you look at the county budget there, you know, these are the major funds providing services to the county. The general fund, our forecast is going to show that the general fund will actually start to hit operating deficits in the next 3 years. And what that does is it's going to continue to erode your reserve base and make the county extremely exposed to a recession. And we all know another recession will be coming, to floods, fire, natural disasters, contingencies that the general fund needs to protect itself against. Our biggest concern is perhaps with road and bridge. In talking with road and bridge staff over the years, they have continued to point out that maintenance deferral is at has been pushed as far as it can be pushed, and that they need approximately $6 million per year going forward to repair, maintain, and repair and maintain the existing 650 miles of roads and the approximate, you know, 40 bridges in the county. The key problem is that the general fund cannot transfer monies from its reserves to road and bridge. They can take operating revenues, but as we've shown, those operating revenues are not going to be available in the future. So road and bridge really does face a crisis in the coming years, and that should be the primary focus going forward. Human services, most of its money comes from federal and state revenue sources. It does get a chunk of the property tax, and because that's falling, there will be, you know, some deficits in that fund going forward, but nothing as major as the other funds. So this terrible chart here, a table here, is the detail of our forecast, and it shows the general fund being impacted. I'm going to move down here so I can see it. It shows the general fund hitting operating deficits 2021, 2022, that makes it virtually impossible for the general fund to support road and bridge, where we show the $6 million need going forward. When you add up those two major fund shortfalls, the revenue need could be met by an approximate $4 million increase. That's the number that comes from our forecast. And here's what would happen if the county moved in that direction. La Plata County would move from the fourth lowest mill levy in Colorado to the eighth lowest, up to 12.5 mills. Currently, the average mill levy in the state of Colorado is approximately 20.2. So we would still be significantly below the median, sorry, that's a median. The median mill levy in the state of Colorado is 20.2. We would still be significantly below that, eighth lowest. So that, this summarizes the very first page. And with that, I would invite other committee members to make a comment, or we're open for questions.
If I could just ask a question, that 4 mil increase that is you listed, that does not take into account the effects of Gallagher, that until it's fixed, it will continue ratchet down.
Well, our forecasts take into account, it's kind of a complex formula that looks at how fast oil and gas drops, and so we then make an estimate of how much further Gallagher will bring down the residential assessment ratio. So that 4 mils includes a compensation for Gallagher continuing to ratchet down residential assessment ratios.
And a follow-up question then as well, does this 4 mils also take into consideration, is that 4 mils will get us where we're operating today into the future? Because we're operating at such reduced staff levels that I don't want to operate at this level, and I don't think it's good for the county community to operate at these staff levels going forward.
In our discussions with Road and Bridge, this 4 mils gets them back to where they want to be, which is above the current level. So you've seen, for instance, that their headcount is down 18%. If you look at the amount of material and road base that they currently deploy, it's down like 50%. This supports bringing that service level back to where it should be, as opposed to where it is today. In the general fund, we looked at where county staff has put the need for future expense growth, and this meets that. So we think this 4 mils would be sufficient to meet the county's operating needs at service levels that staff deems sufficient.
This question, does this include extension of any blacktop? Because we have some gravel roads that are over 1,000 trips a day right now, and usually the threshold, I've been told, is around 500 to 600.
Yeah, so one of the key elements, we've looked at the county a plan for roads, and yes, there is a blacktop surfacing in those in that number. One key element of that number is you're not going to get grants if you can't put up a significant amount of money. So the key is leveraging that $6 million to attract grants, so you can do more than just, you know, the $6 million that you're putting forward. And yes, you know, we expect that road and bridge presentations to really demonstrate the need that we're talking about here would be an integral part in educating the public into why this is a necessary move that we think the county needs to make. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. I was wondering, can you all introduce yourselves and just tell us just a snippet of your background? And
Mr. Chairman, why don't you start?
Ron Corkish, chairperson for the Long-Term Finance Committee. Have 30 years of financial background, primarily in commercial banking.
Tim Miller, I'm kind of the newbie, I guess. Just this past year was appointed to the committee. I have 30 years experience with Amoco and BP as a explorationist, as a trader, as a natural gas deal structurer, just. And I worked a lot in the Southwest U.S. I mean, that was my main focus the last 10 or 15 years.
Thank you. I know we lost a committee member earlier.
You want me to get up here?
Sure.
I'm Ken Fusco. I've been on this committee from its inception back 9 years ago. My experience is a financial planner. Been that for over 30 years. A business down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Morning, Gene Bradley. I've been on the Long Range Finance Committee 7 or 8 years, I guess since inception with Ken. I was with KPMG, an international accounting firm, for 30 years, a senior partner in Kansas City and then Chicago, and been in Durango 22 years now.
Gary Masoner. I lose track. I think it's been about 4 years that I've been on it. Goes back education, Stanford MBA in finance, CFO of a large truck manufacturer, the biggest in the country. Then went in venture capital, ran a computer company. I've only got 30 years experience because I retired kind of young, even though I'm older than most of these guys.
And I'm Rich Butler, various financing groups internationally, oil and gas in West Africa, and then corporate finance for a very large New York City bank for close to 30 years.
And the member that had to leave was Sydney Zink, who's been an owner-operator and a CPA for many years.
I believe she's also on the State Transportation Board.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, thank you. You're an impressive group, and appreciate all of your volunteer hours you've dedicated to the committee. Did any of the other members want to address the presentation or add to it?
Well, I'd just like to say that we appreciate the work that staff has done in teaching us the difference between public accounting, which we're all very familiar with, and governmental accounting, and how different those two are and how they translate. So staff has been very helpful with that. And I think, you know, in our slide presentation, we hear and we all, as individuals, are told to live within our means. And we all do that, and we all practice that. And I think our presentation, you know, bears out that live within our means has two points to it. We can either reduce the services and that sort of thing, or increase the means. And that's really what this comes down to. And I really appreciate Rich Butler and his expertise and drive, and probably has put in twice as many hours as the rest of the committee. And we applaud you for your efforts on that. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'd like to say something.
You know, I don't think enough of credit is given to the county over the years. I've been a resident for about 24 years, and I've been on this committee, like I said, 8 years, but the way this county has been managed has been exceptional. I don't know who started putting away the reserves back when oil and gas, when we got all those revenues, but we were able to use those funds in a capital arrangement where we were able to buy a number of different properties without ever going in financing those. So I have to give credit, you know, to those people that put aside that money years ago. Also, in my role as a financial planner, I did a lot of pension planning, and I have to give credit to this county for not going into a defined benefit plan and unfunded liabilities that could have been accrued. They took the position years ago in putting together a defined contribution plan, which, you know, doesn't give, you know, it's not going to have a big liability going forward.
Like para. Yeah.
I think that concludes our presentation, unless there's other questions.
I would like to ask you a question that Mr. Fusco kind of, I can't say alluded to, but it spurs in my mind, and that is, we've struggled with public perception related to some of our remodeling and acquisition of, say, the property in the tech center, and that actually, to use that savings, what was a recommendation that came out of the long-term finance committee, and we certainly, I think it's the right thing to have done, because as Mr. Fusco indicated, we were able to use savings to address some facility needs that clearly existed within the county, and we were able to move a lot of, several, I don't know the number off the top of my head, departments out of rental properties and into county-owned properties as a result of those actions. But could somebody just address why it was a recommendation before the committee to deploy some of that capital money?
Sure. I think you know, to be fair, the reserve accounting in government accounting is some of the most complex stuff we've run across, but in general, the opportunity to move county staff into county-owned property going forward into the future saves on operating expenses. And I think that when we looked at the level of reserves that had been wisely built up, they were dedicated solely to go for capital investments in facilities. So those funds could not be willy-nilly pulled out and used to cover operating shortfalls. So as Ken said, it was a very, very wise thing that that the county did as oil and gas revenues were flush. And the county has invested those now into buildings that they own. Their ongoing rental payments, lease payments will essentially disappear. We've taken that into account in our forecast as well. And so it's it's important to look at the operating expenses of the county going forward, compare that to, you know, to what the future is going to hold for property taxes and other tax revenue in general. And that's why we feel it's time to recognize that reality. This is a new reality, and it was great having those reserves, but they can't be used for operating shortfalls. It's just as simple as that.
It's not typically prudent to use your capital for
no.
your operations
That's right.
anyhow, because
That's right.
they will
Once
run
it's
out.
Gone, it's gone.
Yep.
Even if it were allowed.
Yeah.
And just back to to be honest, the four mills was lower than I kind of thought you would be recommending, and from the seat that we sit in, I would love to know that four mills is enough, but some of the other things that, and staff may be in a better position to answer this than the committee is, but you know, we have stopped funding the branch libraries. We have significantly cut some contributions to local nonprofits that provide services that because they provide the service, the county doesn't need to. It's actually operationally more efficient to, for instance, you know, to give donation to use county money investing in nonprofits so that we don't have to provide all the programming. Do you know to what extent some of those things we've cut are captured with this? And also, how are we going to fund our future capital
Bond
needs as well if this is really about operating?
And that's why we are not making this as a recommendation. What we're saying is that four mills is the level that we see. So a net four mills. So there are scenarios where depending on how this mill increase is structured, you might need to share it with other entities, but the county needs four mills to meet the operating forecast that we've made. It doesn't take into account, like you brought up, future capital needs. And we'll be glad to talk to you about that. But we wanted to structure this as how can we get the county back to the operating level that existed in the past to meet the growing operating needs of the country of the county as population and inflation impact you. So that's what this does, and that's what this horrible table here shows. There are many, many other pages on our spreadsheet behind this that populate this on a line-by-line basis, and you would see in there that, in fact, if you look at that very last block, the capital improvement fund, that's where most of the county's funds for investing in capital projects reside. You see that fund, you know, never gets replenished back to where it was 3-4 years ago under this scenario. It doesn't go negative, but it's certainly not building up a significant reserve to deal with any significant large future capital need.
That's something that
yeah.
we definitely, I think we're all biting, chomping at the bit to get a plan to maybe do something up at the fair, to move the fairgrounds. And I think that's, it's a struggle to talk about things that would be very nice improvements when we're just talking about how do we keep from closing offices or going to four
right.
days a week and the like. I mean, that's just not.
Well, the nice thing about this model is we can easily incorporate additional capital needs and out pops a number that takes into account the ravages of Gallagher and all of that noise that is creating this current fiscal imbalance. And I guess our thinking is that fiscal imbalance is the most important one right now, and going forward, addressing capital needs can also be examined by our committee.
Great, thank you. I appreciate that clarification, because it's really, I think it's a good approach too, because it tells you what you need for operations, but and not mixing it with those other things.
Yeah.
But if the community decides those other things are important, be aware that's not going to be part of what this $4 million covers.
That's right.
As a price tag.
It strikes me that with our oil and gas revenues continuing to decline, that in 2019 we are operating La Plata County on a revenue stream, the same revenue stream really that we had in the 1980s.
Yeah, that's, I think that's pretty remarkable, yeah.
And so the Gallagher Amendment was adopted in 1982. Tabor was adopted in 1992.
Oh, okay.
And prior to Tabor, which is short for the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, prevents elected officials from raising the mill levy to meet revenue needs. So that's kind of new in Colorado history. Prior to Tabor, we would balance our budget with some sort of corresponding mill levy increase. And all of our surrounding states, that's how they meet their budgets. So we are not able to do that without going to a vote of the people. And we know we tried to pass a 2.4.
2.8.
Oh,
2.4, yeah, sorry, that's right.
In 2015 and then again in 2016, and
yep,
we lost by maybe
425 votes.
Yeah. you paint an urgent picture for La Plata County to do something.
Yeah.
So we have to think about that and make some difficult decisions. Do you have recommendations for us on, I saw one of your other recommendations in addition to pursuing a Gallagher fix was educate the public about why we're here. Do you have some ideas for us to take that message, your message to the public?
We certainly can. I don't know that we're prepared with that this morning.
Okay.
But in the past we've had small groups that have met. One of the thoughts is getting a contingency of individuals pulled together from each community within the county and different areas of the county that could help to evangelize. And again, it gets back into the education. Many of us have been into this, 4, 5, 8 years. So we understand the difference between the accounting models and reserves, what can be used, what can't be used. And I think, as we read different articles in the paper, we see how people don't understand really, that they can't take money from their vacation fund as individuals to pay for the hot water heater. We can all do that, right? We can take money from our vacation fund, and if the hot water heater goes out, we just buy a new hot water heater and the vacation fund is less. When you deal with, for example, the conservation fund that comes with lottery, right? And a lot of that's to be used for parks and those kinds of things. There's an easy perception that, wow, we're putting all this money into parks and we're putting it into trails and we're putting it in. Meanwhile, you're telling me we need to do road improvements. Why can't you just take money from your vacation account and pay for the hot water heater?
And for clarification, that's a city conversation going on right now.
Exactly. Right.
The county, it's a similar conversation. It's just
it's a similar conversation. And I think rightfully so, you called out that there's a a desire to move to the Durango Park, and that takes money, right? And currently, that's funded by the Conservation Fund, you know, so someone looking at the budget line item and seeing that there's X number of dollars associated with that development might go, wow, we've got $3 million allocated for that venture. Why couldn't we use that to fix the roads? Because you can't.
You can't.
You can't use that. And so it's that level of education, you know, and changing the culture and the paradigm shift of you just take it from one vacation fund and buy the hot water heater. That's not how this works, and educating the public. And I think that's the key, is before people can understand and cast a correct, make a right voting decision, they have to understand the ask and the why behind the ask.
Yeah, and I think you raised a good point. We all saw, you know, the city's tax question fail, and it failed by a significant amount, much more than the county's ballot issue back in 2015 and 16. And I think the feeling we got as a committee in looking at that was that there just wasn't enough outreach from the city councilors. You know, staff is restricted in what they can do once a ballot issue gets out there in the public. So we all really need to try and educate as much as we can these 17 slides, somehow getting them into the consciousness of La Plata County residents. And you know, that's something, you know, we'll be glad to help with and talk to citizens groups or small groups that we can put together to try and get this message out there. And I think it's also important for the commissioners to start that process soon, because it is complex. You know, this isn't easy stuff. It is complex.
And one other thing I'd like to add is we have seen articles, you know, in the Herald from the Durango. We've seen articles in regard to libraries. And we're all facing the same issues and have the same cause. So part of the recommendation that might come is some kind of a collaborative effort, a consistent message from libraries, consistent message from Durango, from the county, because we're all impacted by the same impacts. It impacts us each differently, but the cause is the same. And so I might pursue some collaborative effort between all those that have an ask as to conveying the why in a consistent manner.
If I may, I'd like to go back to your point about the global trend in natural gas prices. And Tim and Rich, you're experts in oil and gas. One of the criticisms we faced in 2015 and 2016 was that we were somehow responsible for driving oil and gas out of the county due to regulations or, you know, what have you. Can you talk a little more about this global trend?
Well, I can talk anecdotally. I was a, I guess you could say, a student of the regional trends, especially in the Southwest U.S. And what has developed since I retired is San Juan always used to be, price-wise, sort of the it was the least expensive gas back, you know, that served the Southwest, that served California, Arizona, New Mexico, some of Colorado, and some of West Texas. I mean, that's the regional sphere of influence for San Juan and Permian Basin gas in West Texas and eastern New Mexico. What has happened in the last few years, anybody that's driven through Carlsbad, New Mexico, or, you know, down that way, there's the Permian Basin has exploded in activity. Oil and energy companies will go to the basin that has the best prospects, that will yield the best result per dollar of capex, of capital expenditure. And right now it's the Permian Basin. That glut, just like happened in the Bakken up in North Dakota, the all that drilling activity now in Permian has now essentially advantaged Permian, where during my entire career, San Juan prices were cheaper than Permian prices, because Permian had access to more markets and things like that. Now, it's completely flipped now, and all the consumers of natural gas will try to align their transportation to the cheapest source of natural gas, which right now is in Permian because of all this activity. So that has had a depressive effect on the entire region's prices, I think. So, but in terms of San Juan, the steady decline in production, that's just a natural decline. Even though coal bed methane is a long lived, has a long reserve to production life, it takes constant new drilling and. Energy companies will go to where they can get the highest rate of return. And right now, it used to be Eagle Ford or Marcellus or Bakken, and it still is to some extent. But right now, Permian is out competing for those capex dollars. That is bottlenecking Permian. I don't mean these negative prices that Rich talked about. I mean, that's a great news flash. But that's like sometimes Bonneville Power, in the middle of the night on a Sunday when there's no demand, they might. The cost of shutting down and reactivating a turbine or something like that, or analogous in oil and gas, outweighs whether you sell the gas or not. So I mean that's a short term thing where it goes negative, but there are definitely bottleneck pipeline takeaway issues where that can depress the price of natural gas, and that's what's going on in Permian, and that is having a depressive effect and a flattening effect as we see in our forecasted San Juan gas price. Again, there can be boomlets. We don't know what direction technology going forward will take. It may advantage Manka Shale over some of the Permian things, but it's hard to project that right now just based on where energy companies are spending their dollars. So that's really more background on that.
Thank you.
That's fine. Yep.
Clyde, did you have any questions for these guys or observations?
Just an observation that your comment about the reserves that are dedicated or restricted reserves. Many times those are both federal, state, and some may be self-imposed as a county, just because it's wise to do that and safe for the future. Rebuilding reserves is something I feel that we need to look at again. I think it's important.
Yep,
it's prudent.
All right, thank you. Kind of on those lines, I think, too, there's a snowballing effect that has been alluded to a couple of times in that state funds may only be available if we have matching funds. And as the state's funds decline, the opportunity, even if we had my matching funds, will go away. And just so much of what we've done over the last 2 years has only been occurred because of our ability to leverage county dollars with state and some federal or collaborative efforts. We'll obviously continue to do that in any circumstance, but I think all of our major road and bridge projects have only occurred because we've been able to leverage some state dollars with them. We're looking at that with respect to the radar and with respect to hopefully some funding for improvements that need to occur as a result of the fire to prevent flooding.
So, Chair,
yes.
Can I comment quickly on that? On the Conservation Trust Fund conversation that we were having a moment ago, I just want to be clear that the Conservation Trust Funds are dollars that are derived from lottery ticket sales across the state that are then deposited into an account. County fund. Those funds are restricted. They can only be used for very specific and very narrow purposes. open space and recreation type activities. If you remember, the board approved a budget line item in the 2019 adopted budget of $3 million for the Conservation Trust Fund. Right now, there are no projects that are currently lined up to use those funds, and much like the conversation just had and we had earlier, those funds are set aside should a grant opportunity present itself in 2019. The county wanted the flexibility to be able to provide match if there's something that comes up this year that we could do either at the multi-event center up on Durango Mesa or whatever the case may be.
Right, and that gets back to your accounting.
Exactly.
Part of the way the county has to operate under state law is if we don't budget for it, so if we don't anticipate we might need it, we can't get it 6 months into the year, and that's another struggle.
That's right.
But that is the least of our struggles right now.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys just really do great work, and I have 100% confidence in the numbers you bring before us. Now, I'm not saying you're going to be 100% right, because we all know forecasting on economics is nothing you want to guarantee. But what is it? Past trends may not reflect future returns, whatever. But super helpful information that we could never access with a little brain sitting between my ears, that's for sure. So thank you. This actually isn't really a topic for decision, so we don't typically ask for public comment, but if there's any member of the public who wants to express some thoughts or observations, you can do that now. If you don't want to, feel free to not. Mr. Skilling, identify yourself. Also, we're doing a new procedure. We lost Mr. Buegrud, but if you'll just state your name, you do not need to, and that you're, whether you're a county resident or not, you don't need to state your address.
Thank you. Buck Skilling, Frank Skilling, county resident, actually city and county resident. I just want to reiterate the big need in going after a mill levy is to get community leaders behind it and community leaders proselytizing for it and advocating for it. That's key. That wasn't done by the city, and unfortunately, there wasn't enough of an effort back in 16. Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else? All right. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and proceed with our agenda, and this presentation certainly will help us going forward, just have a plan, hopefully, and hopefully get the public engaged in this important topic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, the next topic on our agenda is a consideration of a letter to our congressional delegation expressing impacts of the federal government shutdown and requesting that the federal government be reopened. This is a decision item. Can we have the staff report, please?
Certainly. Good morning, Commissioners. Megan Graham, County Public Affairs Officer. You have before you three letters. They're identical letters. They are drafted to each member of the delegation, the two senators and Representative Scott Tipton, urging the three of them to do what they can to address and mitigate and solve the partial government shutdown. The letter outlines the impacts that our community has faced since the shutdown began on December 22nd, both in terms of economic impacts due to forest closures, tourism dollars, things like that, as well as the very real impacts that community members are facing. Just on Friday, we learned that the Department of Agriculture is telling states that they need to distribute SNAP dollars early, which forced a very quick turnaround for folks who needed to recertify their benefits. We found out on Friday that people had to recertify by Monday at 5 o'clock. excuse me. So, and also, of course, the many federal employees that we have in our community are impacted by this shutdown. So this letter outlines some of the impacts and, again, encourages each member of the delegation to correct and fix the shutdown and end it. And so staff recommends that you sign this letter and send it to Senators and Representative Tipton. Any questions?
Okay.
don't have any questions. I'm really glad that we are sending these letters off, and I look forward to getting responses from each of our congressional delegation members.
So could you just bullet point the topics that are contained in the letter for anyone who may be listening online and it's not on the screen, so just some of the things that the county's identified?
Sure. The letter articulates that there are many federal employees who live in La Plata County, including folks who work for the Forest Service, BLM, TSA. They're not receiving paychecks during their furlough. There are other employees who are working and are not being paid as well. This, of course, affects folks' ability to pay their bills, buy food, contribute to the economy, make any child support payments. All of those things have a compounding effect on families and our local economy. The letter mentions that La Plata County's economy is primarily driven by our surrounding public lands. The San Juan National Forest headquarters is in Durango, and the forest comprises a significant portion of the land mass, and it's an essential economic driver for our community. Additionally, Mesa Verde in neighboring Montezuma County, its closure has an impact on drawing visitors to the area. We're also concerned that the EPA's cleanup project, which is in the planning phases right now for construction potentially in the spring, is hindered by the closure. As I mentioned, the Department of Human Services is seeing impacts already on providing food assistance and has had to expedite timelines for folks to recertify their eligibility. Some of the more specific issues that we address in here, the La Plata West Water Authority has had to delay installation of water lines of domestic water to the west side of the county because the USDA is not able to provide funding. And additionally, the county is working on close to concluding a remodel to house the U.S. Marshal's office over in the basement of the courthouse. That remodel is to be reimbursed by the GSA. So the shutdown potentially delays the payment of upwards of $800,000 for that project. And I think that is it in terms of the bullet points there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Megan? All right, this is a matter of public comment. Is there any member of the public would like to address the board on this topic? Please come forward.
My name is Pam Moore. I'm a county resident. I'm the deputy director at the Homes Fund. And I just wanted to let you know one of the impacts our agency has had is one of the partner mortgages for our down payment assistance program are USDA loans, which is one of our main tools because it's 100% financing, which a lot of families need. And you cannot submit any USDA loans right now. So there's not only the backlog of people who were already in the system, but the USDA is quit accepting any application. So as soon as the doors open, there's going to be this giant backlog of transactions that haven't been processed. And in real estate, there's always this effect of that sale then affects another sale. The other thing that's happened to our agency is we did a lot of due diligence this last year to create a mobile home lending program. We got an award from the CDFI program in the fall to fund that, and that contract has not come our way. So we're going to have to fund those deals out of our operating funds until our contract comes in. So those are the two impacts we've seen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public who'd like to speak on this topic? For hearing none, we'll
excuse
close.
Excuse me, we just went offline. I'm not sure why.
We've been having problems for almost an hour. A contractor cut a line over there.
Hang on, Jennifer. If you want to talk, will you come on up so
yes,
that we can hear you? We are recording locally, though, correct?
We are recording, yeah.
We are recording locally, is that what you said?
We're recording through our other backup system.
So the internet's down, we're not streaming, but as soon as the meeting's over and the internet is restored, we can post the recording out on online.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, the internet was cut about an hour ago over at the courthouse. So we let Jan know to copy her minutes into Word, but it's not streaming live right now, but we'll put this up online as soon as we can. Okay.
So we can proceed.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, thanks. So that concludes public comment on this topic. Commissioners, is there any discussion, changes to the law before we take action?
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve and sign the letters to Congressman Tipton, Senator Gardner, and Senator Bennett requesting that the federal government be reopened.
All right. Mr. Church, did you have anything to add?
Nothing to add.
All right. If I can, I'm sorry. Can we change the third paragraph to just... No, it says the economy is primarily driven by public lands. I think that's an overstatement, so we can just say a primary driver of our county. Okay?
I amend my motion to support amending the letter as stated by Commissioner Westendorf.
Thank you. All right, any other discussion? Those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Okay, thank you very much. That motion passes. Takes us to decision agenda item two, which is consideration of a transfer of a retail liquor store license to Upper East Side Liquors LLC.
Good morning, this is Jennifer Boyer, licensing coordinator for La Plata County. Upper East Side Liquors LLC is requesting the transfer of a retail liquor store license from UES Ventures Inc. The business name Upper East Side Liquors will remain the same. A complete application has been received and the applicant is not proposing any changes to the existing building plan and the land use permit remains effective. A complete background check was done on Brooke T. Whitman, and there are no incidents to report. Notice was placed on site 10 days prior and verified daily by the Sheriff's Office. Staff recommends approval of the transfer of a retail liquor store license from UES Ventures Inc. to Upper East Side Liquors LLC. Any questions for me?
Any questions for Jennifer?
I have no questions.
No questions.
And is the applicant here?
She is.
Ah, great. Hi, applicant. if you could just come forward maybe and just fortify the record a little bit about the transfer, just what's going on, maybe to put some flesh on the bones. Thanks. And if you'll identify yourself.
My name's Brooke Whitman. I'm a resident of the county.
Okay, great. And the applicant here for the transfer of the liquor license?
Yes.
Okay, could you just tell us the context?
Purchased the business last Thursday, and I'd like to take over operations and need to have a license. I closed on the business purchase last Thursday, and I'd like to take over operations, and I need the valid license to do so.
Okay, that's a good summary. all right, is there anything else you think the board needs to know?
I don't believe so. I don't intend to change a lot, so hopefully all my staff will stay and things will continue as they have been, and I know they have a good record.
Great, thank you. Any questions for the applicant?
Questions? Thank you.
No questions.
All right, thank you. This is a public hearing. Actually, it's called a decision agenda item. I don't know if it's a decision agenda item or a hearing. Does anyone know?
I know it's a decision agenda
item. Okay, thank you. That's a technicality that only an agenda geek would care about. But we do like to try to stay within the law. This being a decision and agenda item, is there anyone who would like to comment on the transfer of the liquor license? All right, seeing none, we'll close public comment and the board can take action if so desired.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the transfer of a retail liquor license from UES Ventures to Upper East Side Liquors LLC.
All right, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah. All righty. Takes us to our reports. Commissioners, reports.
Madam Chair, I will be weather depending, leaving for Denver in the morning for meetings with the Air Quality Control Commission, as well as some county business with Colorado Department of Health and the Environment.
Great, thank you very much. Mr. Church, anything on your side?
This coming Saturday, I'll be attending the open house in Breen.
And what is that?
That's
regarding?
It's, I didn't write it down.
Are you supposed to take something for the potluck?
I should.
Better find out some details, buddy. You don't want to show up empty-handed.
I'll get on the block, please forgive me.
All right, I think I've got that on my calendar. I think I can fill in that blank. It looks like it's a Fort Lewis Mesa Planning District open house at the Breen Community Building. 1 o'clock, is that the one you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, correct.
All right. Anything else you need to report on?
Not at this time.
Okay. I guess we will be having I'll let Cheryl talk, or Chuck talk about the 1041 meeting this afternoon. I attended the Alliance meeting this morning. I wasn't able to stay for the whole thing because we had our exec session at 8:30. I was excited, in fact I took a picture of the screen, about some of the new companies that are coming online or have come online here in La Plata County, including MuniReps. I believe that's the company that did our VRBO work, and they have moved to Durango, I believe, at least to La Plata County from Dolores. And Epic, which is a local magazine, has now expanded to circulation outside of, I believe, even Colorado. And those, I think both of those projects seem to have come through the SCATE program. Trying to think if there was the summit, economic summit. Summit is being planned for the fall. It happens every year, and it's a very good thing to attend if you're in the area. And they're looking for a new executive director, Roger Zalmaritis, who served the Alliance for about 6 or 7 years, I think, is now working in economic development with Southern U. I have office hours on Thursday of this week at Bayfield in the Pine River Library, beginning at 10 a.m., and it's a first-come, first-serve kind of thing. The Durango Rocks Annual Awards are on Thursday night. Commissioners often attend that, and if you may have your tickets, if you ordered them, check with Jen. And I think that's going to get us through things I can tell you guys about, at least at this point. Moving on to the county manager report.
Commissioners.
Mr. Stevens.
Commissioners, good morning. Commissioner, as you just alluded to, you have a pre-work session this afternoon at 1:30. That's going to be on 1041 rights. That'll be at 1:30 in the afternoon in this room. Tomorrow morning, you have board discussion time at 8:30. You'll have two commissioners present, as Commissioner Lackout will be traveling to Denver. Next Tuesday, 1 week from today at 10 a.m. in this room, you have your planning agenda meeting. And next week, on Wednesday the 23rd, we have the Southern Indian Tribe Environmental Commission Air Quality Program meeting is going to take place in this room, and that's going to take place at 2 o'clock.
Great. And Mr. Stevens, forgive me for not having memorized our holiday schedule, but I know that Monday is Martin Luther King Day. It runs in my mind that's the day the county offices are closed. Am I correct?
County offices will be closed.
Thank you very much.
Weather permitting, I'll be going to some of the same meetings that Commissioner Lackland is later this week. On the air quality control with the Southern Ute Indian Tribe State of Colorado Environmental Commission, the specific focus of that conversation will be about the minor source permitting program, just to narrow that down a little bit. And this afternoon's 1041 presentation is reliant on access to the internet. So,
All right, then. We have a couple of written reports. One is the 2018 financial status report from finance, as well as the fourth quarter updates coming from the assessor's office. Any other business?
Nope.
Seeing none, that means adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Whoa, that was kind of cool.
That was a gamble for me.
It was. Dang, there's all that pins off.
Hey, Jan? Hey, Jan? Jan? Do you want me to stop this recording? I'll just pause it.